I imagine there are going to be celebrations, you know, spanning the 8-year period, and then certainly when we get to 2025, that's when the canal opened for traffic, and so that would be another big anniversary year.
Do you think that the state is really taking advantage of this opportunity? They seem to have gotten on board, like with women's suffrage. You know, you see the state coming on board with, you know, promo campaigns and so forth. But
that's right, and women's suffrage overlaps with this the bicentennial of the beginning of construction of the canal. So perhaps the state's going to, you know, have a bigger push come 2025. I don't know what their plans are. But certainly there are cultural organizations up and down the length of the canal and beyond that are all doing conferences, celebrations, events this year.
Specifically Buffalo, what is our really true legacy as far as the canal goes?
Well, the canal is what made Buffalo. I mean, we were here on the Great Lakes, but completely isolated from the east, from the East Coast. We were the gateway to the West if only people could get to Buffalo, right? And so that they could access Lake Erie and travel further west. And so inland navigation was very, very difficult before they had built the Erie Canal. And most of central and western New York were wilderness. These areas were not settled in the way that, say, Utica and the Mohawk Valley over towards Albany. White settlement there, European settlement, goes back 100 or 200 years earlier than this section. So the canal is what brought the East, you know, through to the West, and it was that missing piece of water between Albany. So Atlantic Ocean, Hudson River from New York up to Albany, and then the Erie Canal connected Albany to Buffalo by water, and that was the missing piece. So it really it made Buffalo what it is. It made it the commercial center of what was then the West.
Now, canal site is supposed to be historically accurate as it can be in this modern day. Do you think it's done justice to the history?
I have followed that whole project very closely. I've been involved in a lot of music programs down there over the years, and it was certainly heartening that instead of, I mean, I'm thinking back to, what was it, 12, 15 years ago when they found some of those original foundation walls of the commercial slip. And the thought back then was we're going to bury them so that they don't get damaged by the elements. And the whole community stood up and said, you know, as I think it was Don Esmond who said, you know, this is our page in America's history book. Why would we bury it, you know? So to watch how it's progressed from that sort of thinking to where we today have a wonderfully interpreted site down there. We have access to our waterfront for the first time in decades. So I've been very heartened by the progress down there.
Of course, Canal Side is very family-oriented, and that was not always the case.
No, it wasn't.
No.
Take us
back in time.
Yeah, I mean, well, there was that whole, the main commercial drag down there, which was called Canal Street, and Mike Vogel and a few others have written a fantastic book called America's Crossroads that really takes you into what it was like down there on Canal Street in the 19th century. This was, you know, many of the Great Lakes sailors referred to Canal Street as the wickedest street in the world. Some of these guys had been around the world. They had worked on the oceans before they worked on the Great Lakes. Buffalo was, by most adult accounts, Canal Street was a dangerous place to be. You had in something like a 3 or 4 block, you know, section, you had dozens and dozens of brothels and theaters and free and easy shows, as they called them. And it was a place where the Lake Erie sailors got paid. It was a place where the canalers got paid, so they all had a little money in their pockets. The fighting was nearly constant from the reports you read from the actual people who were there. It was also a very musical place. So just a really colorful and teeming with all kind, you know, you have immigrants, you have dock workers, you have Great Lakes sailors, you have canalers, you have freed African Americans from the South, you have Native Americans, you have young 13 and 14-year-old orphan boys who worked on the canal. It's just, you know, colorful beyond belief.
And that all churns into a very vibrant musical scene.
Oh, absolutely. You know, they say I was really interested to discover that there was a folklorist named Ivan Walton who traveled the Great Lakes in the 1930s looking for old sailors who remembered, you know, the heyday of what they call the Age of Sail, when great big 2- and 3-masted schooners were on the Great Lakes. And these guys all had memories of these citizens of Buffalo, and I love this, coming down to the Buffalo waterfront at Canal Street just to listen to the Great Lakes sailors sing their work songs on the ships, right? There are what we know today as sea shanties, right? These songs that sailors would use to coordinate the labor on the ships. There were so many boats at any given time singing in the harbor to do their work that ordinary citizens would come down just to listen to this. So you had that sort of functional music going on some of the Great Lakes ships. You had tons of entertainment, music for entertainment in the Canal Street area. Really gave birth to the minstrel shows, which traveled up and down the canal in the 1840s, 50s, 60s. And then you had music on the canal itself. I mean, the canal was a fairly isolated trip for the canalers. If you were lucky, the captain or somebody on board might have a harmonica in their pocket or something they could play, a fiddle. But we have lots of accounts of, you know, these mule drivers, horse drivers, these boys who were 14, 15 years old, walking down the towpath. Of course, they worked at all hours in the warm weather, singing songs so loudly, and probably just to keep themselves awake at night and keep themselves from going crazy, singing so loudly that they're creating public disturbances, and they're getting they're getting flack in the newspaper for it.
That's what we hear at Canal Side today. That's concerts get so loud. There's so
exactly.
many folks around.
the difference, of course, is that, you know, there were no radios. So if you wanted music, you made it, or you went and stood and listened where someone else was making it, and that usually wasn't convenient. So the canal was a very musical place, and so we have this great body of music that was either written about the canal or in some cases really came out of the canal experience itself. And I've just been fascinated with trying to dig up, excuse the pun, as much of this stuff as I can.
And what new gems have you found, would you say?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There are a couple of small published books that touch on aspects of canal music, but really so much of it is buried in at the Library of Congress on old field recordings that were made in the 30s, in university archives, in basements. I've gotten great stuff, sort of undiscovered stuff from places like Indiana, and from Illinois, from archives where they have collected some of this material. And so it's never really all been published in one place. And so it's really like almost like an archaeological project to dig this stuff out, figure out not only what the context was, but what it sounded like, because a lot of it is not in musical notation form. It might be a set of lyrics jotted down in a canal boat captain's diary, right? So when did they sing this, and what was the melody attached to it? You know, so it's a real process, and it's super fun.
Can you give us an example of maybe one song that you thought was particularly interesting, which would kind of sum up the times of the day?
Sure, and it probably wouldn't be the song that most people attach, most people think of when they think of the Erie Canal, is the mule named Sal, you know, 15 miles or 15 years on the Erie Canal. Turns out that was never sung on the Erie Canal. That was a 20th century song written by a composer, professional musician. So that is not a song from the 19th century canal. So one of the things I really like is this piece called The Raging Canal, which is... it comes from the cycle of humor on the canal, 19th century, where, you know, the canalers were constantly bumping into real sailors, ocean sailors, lake sailors. And the canal in its first form was only 4 feet deep and 40 feet across. So it was not like being a real mariner. So there was this whole thread of humor on the canal surrounding, like, you know, terrible storms out there and pirate ships on the canal and just sort of like these exaggerated circumstances. And so there's this great song from the 1840s called The Raging Canal, which has dozens and dozens of verses. I've sort of culled about 9 or 10 verses places that I like that tell a great story of, you know, sort of danger out there on the canal. And
can you just a cappella kind of give us maybe one verse?
Oh, gosh, yeah. And Buffalo is mentioned throughout in a bunch of these songs, which I love. Let's see. Come listen to my story, you landsmen one and all. I'll sing to you the dangers of this raging canal. For I am one of many who expects a watery grave. I've been at the mercy of the wind and the wave. And it goes on to detail a phenomenal storm that never happened on the Erie Canal. Mark Twain actually picked up this thread of a raging canal, and he wrote a wonderful poem, very lengthy poem called The Aged Pilot Man, where, you know, it's 40, 50, 60 stanzas of terrible weather on the Erie Canal and trees bending sideways and boats capsizing. And then at the very end, when all seems to be about to be lost, a farmer walks to the edge of the canal, lays down a wood plank to the boat, and everyone walks silently and safely ashore. Right? It was not dangerous in the way that the life of the sailor was.
I mean, this was an enormous economic development project, as we would call it today. And who were, like, the main movers and shakers of that time in Buffalo that were involved?
Well, there was a great debate, and that would probably be putting it mildly, as to where the canal was going to end. Was Black Rock going to be the end of the Erie Canal, or was Buffalo going to be the end of the Erie Canal? Both towns knew that wherever that canal ended was going to become a major commercial center, boom town. And so in Black Rock, there was Peter Porter sort of spearheading the argument that the canal should end in Black Rock, and it really made a lot of sense to end it there. Black Rock is a couple of miles in from Lake Erie, and it's protected from the weather, and they had a natural harbor there.
And Peter Porter, of course, is his name is on a street down there now.
It is indeed, yeah, and he was, you know, a big War of 1812 figure. And so at the same time Black Rock was lobbying for the western end of the canal, Sam Wilkeson in Buffalo, they actually brought DeWitt Clinton here. He was the governor of New York at the time in 1816 and said, yeah, take a look around. You know, wouldn't this be a great place if you end up building that canal? And so Buffalo, the problem with Buffalo being the end of the canal was there was no harbor. There was a huge sandbar in the way. Blocking access.
Details.
Yes, details. So the story goes that Buffalonians literally at the 11th hour went out and dug themselves a harbor. They cleared the sandbar and they stole the terminus of the Erie Canal away from Black Rock. So Buffalo became the big boom town and Black Rock remained a small little village.
How did the suburbs fit into all this?
Well, I mean,
what we call the suburbs now.
Tonawanda was at one point the lumber capital of the world, and that was all due to the commerce on the Erie Canal. So there's tons of, you know, history there. And then, of course, Lockport. I mean, you had Lockport is named for the flight of five locks they had to build to get canal boats up and down the Niagara Escarpment. So, yeah, throughout. I mean, but Buffalo was a tiny little village. In 1825, when the canal opened, there were maybe 3,000 people living in Buffalo. So who knows how, certainly far fewer in 1817 when they started construction. Buffalo had just been burned down 4 years earlier during the War of 1812. So this was a tiny little outpost at the time of the canal and was instantly a teeming place once it opened.
And that was when Buffalo was burned down, a lot of those folks moved to what is now like the Williamsville area.
Yeah.
So they must have played a big role in the canal as well.
That could be, yeah. I don't know much of the story there, but it would certainly be plausible, yeah. There's a series of concerts that are going to take place in the fall in canal towns, in old opera houses in canal towns. You know, places like Albion and Holly and Brockport all had these real cool downtown sort of districts that were all sort of came about because of the canal coming through their towns. And so there are wonderful old buildings and in many cases theaters and opera houses that have been refurbished. And so there's a concert tour that's going to go through a bunch of canal towns in the fall.